If you have your Bible, go to Ephesians chapter 6. And from what you can tell from the passage, you can tell what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about families. But I want to start with this. We've been addressing the issue that relationships are at the very core of life. You can't go through life all alone. Even those of you who are the biggest loners or just kind of have a hard time dealing with people, you can't go through life all alone. One of the worst ways you can punish someone is through putting them into solitary confinement, right? You lock them up into a cell where they have no contact with people. And as a matter of fact, you know, we do have that kind of punishment in our penal system. And because it's so powerful, because it's so dangerous, they actually do put limits on how long people can be in there. If someone is left locked up all by themselves for long enough, left by themselves for too long, it begins to actually kind of warp them and twist their minds in strange ways. If you've ever seen the movie Castaway, the Tom Hanks character is someone who's stranded on a desert island. And as he's there longer and longer, he realizes that he doesn't have people to talk with. He doesn't have any relationships. And so he actually takes a volleyball that he finds and he paints a face on it, names him Wilson, and then starts to talk to him. And through the movie, that's his only relationship. What's interesting, if you want to watch the movie, is you actually see the volleyball start to become a real person to him in certain moments. But it illustrates the fact that that we can't live without relationships. You know, that relationships are at the very core of life. I mean, so much so that when your relationships in your life are going well, everything in your life seems to be good. Everything seems to be at peace. Everything seems to be coming up well. When relationships or certain relationships aren't going well, the whole of life feels hard. The whole of life feels muddy and difficult and stressful. That's how powerful relationships are. And so what we've been looking at is that in Ephesians, the Apostle Paul teaches us that the gospel is powerful, that the gospel has this incredible power to transform our lives. It changes our eternity. It can change our identity. It changes our character. But at the very end of the book, he says the gospel even has the power to change your relationships. It even has the power to change and to reshape, you know, the interactions and the people in your life, the way that you deal with them. And so that's what we've been looking at for the last couple weeks. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the issue of community, and we saw the community, that the gospel actually gives us the ability to connect on a deeper level. It doesn't mean that we always do, but it gives us the ability to connect in a deeper level and in a deeper way, and through that, to be more and more changed by one another through fellowship and through accountability and through strong relationships. Last week, we looked at the fact that the gospel also changes our marriages, that it can turn our marriages into Christ-centered marriages, that, you know, that for a husband and wife, the gospel points us to Jesus in a way that other marriages aren't, and that when our marriages turn to Jesus, the nature of the marriage itself changes. It deepens, it strengthens, it sweetens, it becomes more sustainable, more real. This week, we're going to be talking about family relationships, specifically about parents and children. And again, if you're not in that stage of life, I do want to encourage you to continue to listen because you might be later on. And even if you're not, it could still be helpful. But we're going to be talking about parent-child relationships. And when we go to Ephesians 6, we see three things. We see, first of all, we see direction to children. You know, God gives this very specific direction to kids. We see the value of children through what he says. And then we also see responsibility for parents. So first, a direction to children. Second, value of children. Third, responsibility for parents. The first point, though, is direction to children. And this one is specifically for children. So for those of you who are children in our congregation, I'd love for you to look up, and I'm going to be speaking to you about this. You can take notes on this if you want, or you can just kind of look at me and listen. And, you know, whenever, I think the couple times where I've done this, maybe I haven't done it that often, but I like when I do it, because I see some of the kids' heads kind of pop up and all of a sudden look at me, and they're not used to looking at me. So it's good to see you guys. You guys look good. And then when I say kids, sometimes like the high school kids kind of turn to me and I go, okay, that's good too. You know, see the high school kids respond too. But the first one is for children. For those of you who are children in our congregation. And what the Apostle Paul does is he addresses you directly and he says this. He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. My guess is for most of you kids, you've heard that verse a lot of times before, right? You've heard that passage before a lot. This is one that I know we read to our kids a lot, that we made sure they memorized and they knew really well. But this is a really important one. What God is doing is God is addressing you. You know, the Apostle Paul is talking to you. And what he's saying is very straightforward. He's saying, he's giving you instruction and he's saying, obey your parents and respect them. And immediately you say, well, do I really have to? Yes, you do. You know, that is what the Apostle Paul says. What he means by that is he means, first of all, he means listen to them, right? When they tell you to do something, do it. When they ask you to do something, the response isn't, do I have to? Or can I do this later? Or, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. What the Apostle Paul says is he says, the way that you respond is you respond by listening and by obeying, by doing. The other part is he says, even just as important as obeying is respecting them. And what respect means is that when they speak or when you talk to them, that you do that respectfully. One of the ways that it's not respectful, for instance, is if they're talking to you, you don't roll your eyes, right? That's a big one. It's like rolling the eyes. Sometimes, you know, I'd be talking to my kids and I'd see the white in their eyes. I'd say, wait a minute, you're rolling your eyes. Or another way that you can be disrespectful is as your parents are talking to you or asking you to do something, you do this. Right? Like that's always a big one. Like even if you say you're gonna obey, like that's not respectful, right? Can you take care of this? Fine, right? Like that's not being respectful. That's not a good way to respond. And what the Apostle Paul is saying is he's saying to obey your parents and to respect them. Now, here's a question I want to ask is why? And I'll give you a couple of options. I'll give you a couple of possibilities. You can answer in your heads. Why should you obey and respect your parents? Is it because they're bigger? Well, they are bigger than you. I mean, that's true, but that's not why. Is it because they're stronger than you? Your parents are stronger than you, but that's not why. Is it because they're smarter than you? You may not think they're smarter than you, but they are, but that's not why. Is it because they're older than you? And you go, yeah, they're pretty old. They are older, but that's not why. The reason why is because your parents are God's gift to you. And the way that you love God, the way that you serve God, is by obeying and respecting them. Now, can I see all the kids again? Is it easy to honor and to obey your parents? No? Yes? No? I see kind of an impudent. I see some kids going like this and going, I think it's yes. I think the answer is yes. It's not easy. Right, it's really, really hard to obey your parents. It's sometimes it's really hard to be respectful. It's not an easy thing, especially when you want to do something else. Right, when you're in your room reading and you're in the middle of a really good part, and your parents tell you to come down and eat dinner right away, it's not easy to say. Usually, what you say is in a minute, or you say, no, I'm busy. But that's not the right thing. It's not easy. It's hard, but it is important. And I'm going to explain in a minute why it's important, but I want you to remember that. It's not easy, but it is important. Now, here's the thing, and I do want you guys to answer. You can nod or you can say yes, you can say no. Does that mean you have to do everything your parents tell you to do? I see a lot of like unsureness. I see some yeses, I see some noes. I see Zoe saying no. I don't know if that's a good or bad sign, Brad, but it's yes and no, right? Most of the time, it's yes. It's yes and no. The yes is that yes, you do need to obey. You do need to respect them, even when it's hard. Especially when it's hard. If it's not hard, it's not a big deal, right? It's not hard to obey God. Then you obey them and you treat them well. But sometimes it's really important when you don't want to, when you don't feel like doing that. And so the basic answer is usually yes. Now, I'm going to tell you there is an exception, right? There is one exception to obeying your parents. And here's the exception. If you want, you can write this down because you might want to hold on to this and remember it for all the other stuff that's going to be coming. But if you want to remember this, here's the exception. The exception is if they ask you to do something that's sinful or that's bad, then you do not have to do that. Now, I know most of your parents, and I know that they probably wouldn't do that. So that's probably not going to come up. But just in case, if they do ask you to do something that's sinful, if they do ask you to do something that's bad, then you can say this to them. You can say no, right? You're allowed to say no. And you can say, this is what the apostle said, and you can say this too. You can say, no, I have to obey God and not you, right? So you can put that in your back pocket, right? If there's ever a situation that comes up where you feel like your parents are asking you to do something that you think is sinful or bad, you can say, no, I need to obey God and not you. That is a good and right exception. There is actually one other time that this becomes an issue, and I feel like I do need to bring it up. There is one other exception, and the other exception is if your parents hurt you. And I'm not talking about like discipline. I'm not talking about them kind of disciplining you for doing something bad or wrong. Right? If your parents are calling you bad names or doing things that physically hurt you, then you should and you need to talk to another adult, right? An adult that you trust. You can always come to me. You can come to one of the other elders. You can come to one of the other adults here at church that you trust. That you can talk to someone at school. But that is kind of a very different exception. But that's an important one. Hopefully that never becomes an issue. Like I said, I know most of your families, and so I know that probably isn't. But just in case, that is the right thing to do then. Besides that, besides those two exceptions, right, God does say to children, he does say, obey and respect your parents. Now, are you guys going to do that perfectly? No, right? You're not going to do it perfectly, but you can do it as well as you can. And so here's the reason why it's important. I wanted to make sure you guys heard this, but this is the reason why it's important. If you guys can all look up me for this, like you don't have to write this down. I just want you to understand why it's so important. God isn't just telling you to do it because he wants you to do it. Here's what I want you to understand. Your parents have a really, really hard job. I know it because I've did it for a long time too with my kids, but your parents have a really, really hard job. The job that God has given them is there to parent you, there to take care of you, not in the way they want to, but in the way that God wants them to. And that's a hard job. But when you obey them, when you respect them, God makes a promise, and the promise is this. When you obey and respect your parents, your home and your church become more peaceful and they become more safe. And so that's why it's important. That's the promise that God gives you. And so when you obey, it makes your home a place of peace and comfort and safety. Now, to everyone else, does this apply if I'm 16? Does this apply if I'm 18? Does this apply if I'm 23 living at home? Does this apply if I'm 55 and living with my mother. Does that apply? And I'll say this, I don't have time to explain it, but it changes. As adults, we are still called to honor and respect our parents. Obedience is a little bit different. But until you're about 16 or 18, I think Paul's words apply very directly. Obey your parents and honor them. That's kind of the way it works in our culture, okay? So that's the first point, is God gives direction to children. He says, obey and respect your parents, and there's all these different pieces to it that we looked at. Second thing that we see, and this is more kind of indirect, and this is to the adults, this is to everyone, but the second thing we see in this passage is we see the value of children, and this is radical. The commentators talk about how radical this is. What the Apostle Paul's doing in verse 1 is he's talking to children, right? He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land, right? The commentators all say this across the board, that it's radical that Paul actually addresses children directly. And the reason why is because in Roman society, children weren't valued. They were thought of as, they weren't thought of well. They were treated poorly. They were thought of as nuisances. For most people, it's not that mothers didn't love their kids at the time, but as a whole for society, they thought of children as a burden. Matter of fact, you know, it was so deep in Roman society that one of the reasons why, one of the things that would happen is for a lot of families, if a child was seen as a burden or a nuisance, if they had children that were unwanted, a lot of times very common practices, they would leave the infants outside to expose them to the weather and die because they didn't want them. Not only that, but in Roman society, if children were disabled or those types of things, then even if they were older, it was legal to kill them, to put them to death, because they were a bigger nuisance. In Roman society, children were viewed, one of the reasons why they were viewed as a nuisance is because for a lot of men, a lot of families, they were viewed as a nuisance because they limited people's ability to be sexually promiscuous, or they would make divorce more complicated, that now all of a sudden they had to deal with a child. Most children at the time were to some degree neglected or abused. And even in good families, children were treated as servants. A lot of times children were treated as slaves. And even when they were older, they could be sold into slavery. And in Roman society, that didn't end when you were 16. If you were an adult living and your parents were still living, your father was still living, all these things could still be true. You could be 28 and be sold into slavery legally by your parents. The reason why all this is radical is because, in contrast, in the early church, children were cherished. In the early church, families were honored. In the early church, children were given this place within the body of Christ. And that's one of the reasons why Paul can actually write to them, because he knows that they're in service. He knows that, you know, when the church is gathering and when his letters were going to be read during worship service, he knew that the kids would be there and he could write to them. He could say, children, obey your parents, honor them in the Lord, right? He could write that to them. And that's why they think it's so radical that that Paul is able to do that. Matter of fact, one of the things that historians note is that in the early church, women and families flocked to the church. And the reason why they flocked to the church is because they knew that the church was the place where they could actually be safe. They knew that the church was the place where they could find good treatment. And in the church, children were included in those things. And so Paul can address them. And, you know, the reason why the early church had that attitude is because of Jesus. You know, if you think about it, in Mark chapter 10, the disciples are trying to keep the children away from Jesus. And what does Jesus say? He says, let the little children come to me. I do not hinder them. Right? Let the little children come to me. In Matthew 18, something similar happens. And he pulls a child up and he says, whoever receives a child like this receives me. And so we see where that comes from. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring it up and the reason why it's so important is not only is it here in Scripture the way that Paul addresses the children of the church, but I think it's necessary because we have the same issue in our society. Right? We have a culture that elevates the ideas of personal choice and personal fulfillment and individual freedom, and children are seen as a death of those things. A lot of people have that idea that when I have kids, then my life is done, right? When I have kids, then it's no more fun. For a lot of people, they have kids, and there is a truth to that experience. You have kids, and it's no more party nights out, right? No more doing whatever I want. No ability to kind of just run off and do whatever I please. And when you have kids, there are ways in which your freedom, your choices do become more limited. And for our society, they see that as death. One of my favorite illustrations that I share when it comes to this like attitude is years and years and years ago, I saw this video of the first day of school. And it was kids at the bus stop, it was parents at the bus stop. And as the kids got on the bus and as the bus drove away for the first day of school, all the parents pulled out their champagne and toasted that their kids were now gone. Right? Now began the school year, and they could enjoy life a little bit more than they could during summer when the kids were always home. I hate to say it, but like I remember when I first saw that, I thought, wow, that's, you know, is this even real? And then I remember kind of seeing that in real life, seeing that in our old neighborhood, seeing, it wasn't champagne at the time, it was like wine, but the same idea, right? The same idea of like, hooray, they're gone. Now, here's the thing. For a culture that sees children as a drag or as a hindrance or as a burden or as a curse, you know, when parents believe that, at some point, it affects the way we parent our kids. It affects the way we treat them. And the big thing is, what message does that end up sending to the kids? All right. Psalm 127, the psalmist says, the children are a gift, a blessing from the Lord. And here, again, like Paul is able to address them. Paul wants to address them because they're there and he cares about them. And it reminds us of this value. They have value. I will say this, like, one of the hard choices we made years and years and years ago, a few years after I had gotten here, is we made the choice to be the kind of church that has kids in our worship service. It was a really, really hard decision to make, and actually, the way that it was made is a lot of the older families, a lot of the leaders in the church started just kind of naturally doing that. And part of that was teaching the things that I taught about parenting. Part of it was that our kids were in service and they were kind of watching them engage in service and grow. But one of the really difficult choices we made years and years and years ago was we wanted our kids to be in service with us. And it was a really, really hard decision to make. It was actually a very unpopular decision. Over the years, we have seen like a couple families leave because they wanted to be at churches where there was a Sunday school running and they could go into service and not be bothered. And I've been at churches that have been like that. My last church was like that. My church before that was like that. And we've had people come and visit who walk into service. And when they see that the kids are here, I know that in their minds, some of them say, yeah, we're going to keep looking. We did make an unpopular decision years and years and years ago. It's one of the reasons why most churches don't do things this way. And in a lot of ways, I think for people, you know, for in a lot of ways, people could say this is our biggest weakness as a church. Right, as a ministry, this is kind of one of our biggest weaknesses is, you know, how much can we really attract new families, or how much can we attract young families, or how is this going to work when kids are growing older, and you know, those types of things. this is kind of my firm belief is because I see it in scripture, it's my firm belief that this thing that people think is our biggest weakness is actually our greatest strength. I think it matters that we're able to have children in here, not just for their sake, but for yours too, for yours and mine. That it forces us to constantly think about the fact that the gospel is bigger than you and I, and it embraces people that maybe we wouldn't, that maybe we even say, oh, this just makes it harder. But it means something even for us, right? To be able to have children in here, to be able to want to nurture them and grow them, to want to pray for them and see them and have them be a part of the community and our lives. If there is more that you want to talk about in terms of the subject, you're always free to talk to the elders. Talk to me, and we can give you more rationale behind why we do things this way, why it matters to us. But I did want to kind of lay that out since we are talking about it. God does say that children are a blessing, even when we don't feel like they are. And when we don't feel like they are, when we if you're a parent and you're in a season where your children don't feel like a blessing, if you're in a season where the things that you think about your kid is the children are they're so hard, or this is such a curse, or I can't wait till this phase is over, or man, if on and on and on, if you're in that phase, it is a really, really hard phase. I don't want to minimize it, but I want to ask you to believe God's truth. To believe what's true that God says. And I guarantee you that if you do and as you do, right, if you do and as you do, God will change your heart and your attitude. But this is how deep the gospel goes. It can reshape our families, to our families, not because our kids obey us, that it becomes safe and peaceful, but in the way that we look at them. That we look at them as a joy and a blessing, right? That it makes the home a place of peace and comfort and security, right? I'll tell you very honestly that that is the thing that reshaped our family. I remember having kids and thinking, this is so hard, and reading Psalm 127, and for the first 5 years of being a parent, telling myself that over and over, children are a blessing from the Lord. And once you actually believe it, it changes the way you parent. It changes the way you do family. So that's the second point. I think we see here in Ephesians 6, not only the command to children, but we're reminded of the value of children, that they are important, that they should be here. The third thing that we see in this passage is we see the responsibility for parents. And this one is really quick in the passage, but I want to make sure that we work through it. Verse 4, it says, Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Basically, the idea is this. As a parent, God has put a lot of heavy responsibility on you. And those of you who are parents know that. You feel that. God has put a lot of heavy responsibility on you. But I want you to know that the responsibility he has put on you is a responsibility of joy. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be easier, but it is a responsibility of joy. I know that for most of you're in the middle of parenting. You're in the middle of like raising your children. You're in the middle of like dealing with whatever the hard things are that your kids are going through, whatever phase they're going through, whatever life stage they're going through, whatever like struggles are in that life stage. I know that most of you are in the middle of it, and because of you're in the middle of it, you're tired, you're frustrated, maybe you're angry from time to time, lose your temper. But I do want to tell you, I think for my wife and I, we're not in the middle of it anymore. We've been out of it for a little while. We're in the phase of parenting adult children, or parenting adult adults, I guess if you want to put it that way. And we do miss the other phase. Not just because we're sentimental. It is a time of joy. It is a responsibility of joy. There are unique things about being able to parent and to raise up young children. As frustrating, as challenging it as it is, there is something very special about it also. And it's really important to remember that. We do miss that, right? I'm not just speaking for myself. Yes, okay. Sometimes I have to double check, like, make sure that I'm not speaking unfairly for both of us, but we do miss it. There are two tasks of parenting that come up through the passage, and both of them are to be rooted in authority and to be informed by love. The first is this. The first is instruction. You notice he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And the first one, even though it's second on the list here, it's instruction. It's important that he puts in the Lord in for both of them, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. With instruction, what he's talking about is he's talking about being a spiritual instructor, a spiritual teacher. You know, what God has done is he's given you a responsibility, a spiritual task of teaching your kids about God and about spiritual things, to help them to see the world through God's eyes, to see what faith looks like. When he says that you're supposed to instruct them, he's not talking about math or science. He's talking about spiritual reality. And we see that all through the Old Testament. Again and again, the Israelites are told to make sure that their kids know, you know, what happened at the Exodus, what the Exodus means. Their adults are told to make sure that their kids know what happened at the Jordan River when they crossed into the Promised Land on dry ground. The kids are supposed to know through their parents what it means that when they went into this new land, that Jericho, the walls fell down. The parents are supposed to help their kids understand what God's commands were when they went into the Promised Land, and eventually why the people were exiled, why they were taken out of the land. That the parents are supposed to teach their kids of the king who is to come, that is greater than David, the one who's going to be their true and everlasting king, the one who's going to be the Messiah and the one who's going to be the Savior. You know, it is a privilege to be able to instruct our kids and to be able to pass on the faith. It doesn't mean they're always going to take it, but it is a privilege to be able to instruct and pass that on. And we do it through our words and we do it through our lives. Right? It's an amazing thing to watch your kids embrace God, to grow in understanding and to experience grace. But I do want to give you a warning, and this is a very, very important warning. It is a wonderful thing to be given that privilege, but the warning is, do not delegate it to someone else. Do not delegate it. In other words, like, you can have people help you. The church can help you in the spiritual instruction. Right? People can help you in the spiritual. Do not delegate it. Do not delegate it to a nanny. Do not delegate it to another family member or an extended family member. And definitely do not delegate it to the church to take care of. I did youth group for 8 years when I first came out of seminary. And the one consistent thing that I saw in the Korean church and the way that we did youth group and children's ministry and church in general is we did it in a way that parents no longer cared about being involved in their kids' spiritual lives. I remember I think my third year doing youth ministry, I gathered the parents together and I wanted to kind of see where they were. I wanted to find out, like, spiritually what was hard, what was good, where they were struggling. And I walked out of that meeting really discouraged because none of them knew anything spiritual about their kids at all. They didn't know whether their kids were doing quiet time. They knew whether they were driving their kids to church. They knew whether their kids liked it or didn't like it. They could tell when their kids were, you know, but they really didn't have any inroads. They didn't talk about anything. They didn't teach anything. They didn't do anything. That was the church's job. And basically from my time doing youth ministry for those 8 years, watching that, I began to realize that the church, the way it was doing things, was actually hurting families, and it was hurting children. Don't delegate your responsibility. The church can help, right? The church is here to help. That's why we have Sunday school system. You know, we want it to be a help. We don't want it to be a replacement, right? If you need help, come in and ask us, seek us out. The teachers, the elders, the deacons, you know, me. And we can help you start to think through what teaching your children spiritual things looks like. We can talk about family worship. We can talk about how you teach doctrine, those types of things. But don't delegate it. Don't give the task to someone else. If you need help, please reach out and seek it. As a matter of fact, what I'll tell you is this, is not just because of today's sermon, but I think at the end of the, towards the end of the month, we are going to have a parenting seminar. It's either going to be one weekend, 1 or 2 days. But I do want to encourage you, especially those of you who are younger families, those of you who are newer families to our church, I do want to encourage you to be a part of that. I'll give you more information because I'm still trying to figure out the schedule and how we take care of your kids as we do that. But I do want to do something where we talk about all these things more in depth. So know that that's coming, but don't give that responsibility away. Don't delegate it. But seek help, right? If you're not sure what to do. The second task that I'll talk about is discipline. And this one I can't talk a lot about. I can't talk really like, I'll do that at the training. I can't do it here. This issue is much more complex. And again, I'm not going to say anything that's going to be recorded, that's going to be put onto our website. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The big reason is that society views almost any kind of correction or any kind of discipline as abuse. Years and years ago, I remember reading a story about how school systems had made a decision that teachers could no longer use red pens to correct students' papers. And the reasoning was it was too hurtful. That was one of those articles that I thought was a joke until I actually found out that school teachers weren't doing that, that they no longer used red pens. Maybe your school does, maybe it's an outlier, but I know for a lot of schools, a lot of teachers, they don't, and they're not allowed to, because it's hurtful. I remember there was an article that I read a few years ago that talked about how timeout was abuse. It was child abuse. And the reason why it said it was child abuse was because it was forced isolation, kind of like we talked about in the early part, right? It was solitary confinement. And they said, it's cruel to put a kid over in the corner and then everyone walk away, right? That's cruel. Like, we live in an age where any type of correction, any type of discipline is seen as abusive. But biblically, discipline is a necessary part of biblical parenting. You cannot get around that. And so again, if you want to come to the class, I'll answer questions and I'll talk about that there. I'm not going to do it here. But I do need to say that because it's true, because it's in the passage, and because it is important. We live in a society where the only type of parenting that's allowed anymore is what's called gentle parenting. I don't know if you've heard that phrase. And that basically means no parenting at all, right? It basically means let your kids do whatever they do, right? That's a huge, huge mistake for a lot of reasons. And we're already seeing the results of that. Discipline doesn't mean harshness, and your discipline should never be in anger. But it is necessary. That's why in verse 4, the Apostle Paul says to instruct and discipline. But in verse 4, he says, do not provoke your children to anger. How do you discipline them in a way that drives them to anger, that drives them to hatred, that drives them to rebellion? Well, you do it in a way that's hurtful, or you do it in a way that's harmful. You do it in a way that is for your reasons, not for God's reasons. And when you discipline for those things, when you discipline in those ways, when you discipline in ways that you're harsh, or you do it in anger, then it will lead to rebellion. It will lead to hatred. It will lead to broken relationships. And it's a reminder that as parents, you too are under authority. Not only are your kids under authority, not only are they supposed to obey and respect, but you are to honor the Lord in your parenting, and to do it in a way that honors and pleases him. And so for you, both the instruction and discipline need to be rooted in authority. You need to be an authority figure in your home. But in everything you do, it needs to be informed by love. And when you do that, same thing, it will bring peace, it will bring comfort, and it will bring blessing. Now, here's the last question, last thing that I wanted to address as we wrap up, but it's this. You might be thinking, that sounds great, but I don't know if I can do that. The way that I was raised, the things that I saw, like, I don't know if I even understand what that looks like. You know, I was brought up in a home where I was neglected, or I was brought up in a home where discipline was like harsh, or I grew up in a home where there was dysfunction, where there was, and so I don't know if I, like, I know what those things are. I know, like, how do I learn to do that if I've never experienced that? How do I learn to be like an authority, but a loving authority? How do I learn to discipline, but not be harsh? How do I learn to create an atmosphere of comfort and security when I've never experienced that? And here's where the power of the gospel comes in. The power of the gospel is that you have been now brought into a new family, that if you're a Christian, you've been brought into a new family. And in this new family, you have a new father. And in him, you see what love looks like. You see what correction, what discipline look like. That in this new family, you have a new brother. You have Jesus. And in him, you see what faithfulness looks like. You see what love looks like. You see what kindness looks like. You see what care looks like. That's the way the gospel transforms your family. That you have become a part of another family, and that family is the one that becomes the imprint in your soul. That is the one that now shows you how to be a true family for God, how to be a good parent, how to be a good son or daughter, right? How to be a part of something that is stable and peaceful and comfortable. And the way that you have gotten this new family, the way that you have been brought into this new family, is Jesus, the true son, has been kicked out of that family. Right? On the cross, Jesus died to give you a place. And when you realize that, when you see that, then you're willing to put these things into practice. Otherwise, it can feel like it's too hard. It's too hard, God, to change the things that I've already learned. It's too hard to do things that I've never seen in practice in my own life. It's too hard to act like this when I feel like this. When you realize that you've been brought into a family and all that's happened through Jesus Christ, through his death on the cross, through his sacrifice, then you're willing to make the sacrifices you need to bring his family into yours, to make your family a place of comfort and peace and love.